there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole.
Hi, I'm Brandon Mole. I'm a number one New York Times bestselling author of a bunch of fantasy series like the Fablehaven series and many more.
And I'm Jason Conforto. I'm a filmmaker, a podcaster, and game designer. In this podcast, we're excited to share our love for story and our passion to create.
We hope to share a bunch of experiences and lessons learned over a lifetime in creative fields.
Well, today, we are not in Brandon Mole's basement recording Mulling It Over. We are actually at the Quills Conference, and for the second time, we have a live audience. So live audience... Hello, everybody. Woo-hoo. And we polled our giant audience before we got started and found out that it's made up of one current listener. So we are grateful for that one. And joining us today, we have two guests. Candace, what is your last name?
Thomas.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Candace.
I am a young adult fantasy author. I also write rom-com under the name Candy Teasdale. And I'm a poet, and I'm part of the league, and geez, I say that I stick my finger in every pie, because I like to learn about publishing and marketing and hybrid publishing and all the stuff.
And to be clear about the league, this is the League of Evil Exes, right?
That's right.
Yeah, you just threw out that league thing there. You want to explain the league to us?
Yeah, the League of Utah Writers is a organization that has been around for 90 years. It's a nonprofit, and we have chapters all over the state of Utah. And we just support writing and our strong community of writers, because Utah just has like... it's just a festering wound of writers, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I also have a podcast called Squirrel, the podcast for the distracted writer. So
Squirrel.
Yes.
Excellent. And tell us a little bit about the conference that we're at, too, so people know what we're doing.
We do an annual conference every year around August or September. We try to bring in a bunch of... different editors and agents and authors to help teach and educate our community. And it's a lot about just networking, I would say. There's a lot that I learn from people and meet people here. That's what we do. And it's a fantastic conference.
Yeah, and networking can feel kind of hard and scary as a writer because it's such a solitary lone wolf profession. Yeah. That it's like, oh, networking. Oh, yeah, I could totally do that. I'm a very social, in theory. I've written dialogue.
I've written about social people before.
I've written about all sorts of people with colleagues.
And I write I write fantasy, and that seems to be where a lot of people are insecure and a little introverted. But here I feel that we're peers, even with the different authors. Like, I'm not quite starstruck sitting next to Brandon Mull.
I still am, just so you know.
But,
so.
Yeah.
And then we also have with us today, Lisa Mangum. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Lisa, you have known Brandon for decades now. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, I have. Time.
Tell us a little bit about how you've worked with Brandon in the past and what you're doing specifically at this conference.
Sure. So I'm managing editor for Shadow Mountain Publishing. I've been in the industry since 1997, which don't do the math. It's a big number. I still remember when Chris Schobinger at Deseret Book in Shadow Mountain handed me a manuscript called Fablehaven and asked me to read it and give my opinion on this brand new manuscript from an untested first-time author who has just submitted something in by Fablehaven by Brandon Mull. And so even though I didn't edit Fablehaven for Brandon, I was one of the early readers for book one and book two. And gave feedback, which was super fun. So I've known Brandon for quite some time, and now I do get to be his editor for I worked with you on Candy Shop War Volume 3 and Tales of Newlandorin.
Yeah, and which is brand new out still. Yes. So
yeah, which yeah. And which was great. And also, Lisa, in her own right, is writing books, and that she also edits, right?
Yeah, I've written 4 young adult novels, and I've written my most recent book is a nonfiction book about the craft of writing called Write Fearless, Edit Smart, Get Published. And it's everything I've learned from 25 plus years of doing my job to help writers anywhere along their journey take the next step, figure out what to do. And so I'm here teaching classes. I'm here taking pitches from authors who are hoping that Shadow Mountain would be a good home for their story. I'm networking, meeting people, being on a podcast. Super fun.
Doing it all. Well, one of the things we wanted to do today is just talk about writing conferences and how to get the most out of these conferences. And so, Candace, I think you might be able to start us off on that. So what are the what's the purpose behind these conferences? And if you are a young, aspiring author and you've never gone to one of these conferences, how do you approach this?
I lost my train of thought. I'm too nervous, guys.
Okay, wait. So just think like this. Think like, you know, if I am a young writer and I've never gone to a conference, what do I want to pay attention to when I go to a conference?
That you're not alone. I think that that's one of the things that I learned when coming to Quills Conference or any other conference, that as a writer, you speak a different language. You have this language of art. And when you're talking with like your family, your friends, they're like, oh yeah, that's really nice. And they don't get it, how difficult it is and how we live in these worlds and they take over our brains and these characters are talking to us.
So, and they're like, that's cute. When are you going to get a job?
Right, exactly. And when you come to these conferences, you realize that you're not alone. You find people that have that same energy and the same ideas. And when you find those connections, I think a lot of those friendships kind of stay forever. And when you find your community and you find your people, then you also find a sense of purpose, because then you have a drive to do what your dream of getting published. You know, these fantasies that you always had when you were young, they become realities when you come to these conferences. This is Quills is how I found my publisher, actually.
Oh, cool.
So I owe the league a lot.
Yeah, so I'm hearing part of it, hey, we're going to these conferences so that we don't feel like we're alone, so we can find some other people with crazy writer brains like ours. And also, you're connecting potentially with agents, potentially with publishers, right? Yeah. Lisa, kind of same question.
Yeah, for young writers, it's interesting you bring it up, because I just have had this experience. My niece sat down and wrote a book, and it's not something that like hasn't been her dream her whole life. She just called me up and she's like, hey, I wrote a book, could you read it? And I'm thinking, oh, yes, I will read it, but it's going to have like all of the mistakes in it. And it did have a lot of mistakes, but it was also really surprisingly strong. And I said, I think you're ready to come to a writing conference, because I think that's the next step. And she's like, I don't know what to do there. And I'm like, this is what you need to do. Take a class on character development, take a class on plot structure, and take a class on anything that you can find that talks about like figuring out your own process, because you're right at the very beginning and those things will stand you in good stead. I did not tell her to go to the classes about querying an agent or networking with a publisher, because she's not there yet. So I think if you're new and you're coming to a conference, actually, even if you're not new, wherever you are in your journey, when you come to a conference, look for those classes that are just the next step up of where you are. If you've been to a number of conferences, if you've written a couple of manuscripts, then yeah, you're ready to take the classes about marketing and self-publishing or querying and pitching. But if you're just starting out and you're still feeling uncertain a little bit about how do I make it work? Is my story where I want it to be? Focus on the craft parts of the conference. From authors who have a track record, who have published before, who specialize in those elements. I also would say if you've any of the visiting guests, if they are teaching any classes about craft, those would be high on the list to go, because you may not have another chance to hear them speak or teach about that subject.
That's awesome. Brandon, when you first started writing, were these types of conferences on your radar? Was this part of your path, or what was your path like?
Yeah, here's what was on my radar was I didn't know what I was doing, right? And I also was a little bit shy about what I was doing. I didn't know how much I wanted to own the fact that I was hoping to write fantasy novels. But what I did do at first is I went and kind of bugged authors when they did signings, right? And I learned this. I learned authors are good for advice. Like if you want some advice, that's a decent thing to approach an author about. If I was ever like, hey, can you help me get published? They were like, yeah, that's not really what I do, right? like if you're trying to get published, that's kind of agents and editors who are your inroads there. But what writers are very useful for is advice on craft or advice on how they attacked getting published. And a beautiful thing about a conference, which I didn't take full advantage of, is you have access sometimes to all those people, right? And so you can go listen to authors talk about craft and give you advice on how you approach this career. And then you can also go listen to editors and agents who are maybe giving you advice on what they're looking for and how you approach them and how you try to sell your stuff. And in general, this is the information we're trying to gather, right, as we're trying to get something published.
That's awesome. Let's talk. Go ahead.
I have to say something. So
you disagree.
No, I do not.
I object. Overruled.
A memory struck me as you were talking about that, because I remember going to a writing for charity event. And was it, 2008, maybe? 2009? I don't remember. It was at the Treehouse Museum. And I was not published. I had barely done anything. I remember having my first page read by Shannon Hale, and she's like, this is really weird. And and it was, because, you know,
thanks, Shannon.
you never start on your first page. Like, it was bad. But anyway, I remember you being there.
Yeah.
And I remember I was too nervous. I just had read Fable Hayden. I was too nervous to talk to you.
And I usually go to the Treehouse Museum just kind of to hang out.
Just to be there.
Just kind of for my own fun.
But yeah. The advice, I remember you giving advice on writing on the floor. does that sound weird? But I remember that you liked to write on the floor and not on at your desk.
I hope I didn't give it too much as advice.
No, it's just something I remember.
But it is definitely a quirk of mine, and it still is. When I was early, a young writer, we lived in a tiny place. And so we had a living room, a kitchen, and a bedroom, and that was it. And my wife was in the living room with the kid, and I wasn't going to write in the kitchen. And so I would end up writing in the bedroom, and what we had was a bed. So I would lay down and open my laptop and write on the bed on my laptop. And that just became what writing was to me. And so then later on, when we had more space and I had a desk, I was like, this feels weird. I want to lay down on the ground. I want to pace around and then lay down on the ground and type on my laptop. And that's what I still do at 50 years old. And it's like kind of hard on the elbows as I get older. But yeah, that's a weird thing. And so, hey, if it works for you, totally steal it. You know, do it. But like, it's really quirky that I do it that way. Yeah.
But it made it very human, honestly. Then I didn't have this like separation of person, like
yeah. It's like, oh, if this guy's that weird, I could probably ask him whatever I want.
I was like, maybe this is normal. But that being a conference of itself was the first introduction I had to going to conferences.
Yeah, right.
So that was, honestly, you were there when everything started.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty weird. Well, I've been doing this for a while. And so, like, you know, if you didn't see it at a conference, I probably would have been at your elementary school. And so, like, that's just kind of that's my story.
Hang out.
The last 20 years, it's
conferences,
like,
and elementary schools.
Yeah, pretty much.
I wanted to talk a little bit about agents, because I know writers, a lot of writers who don't have agents, that's kind of the next step. How do these conferences help you in that step to meet agents, and what does that process look like at a conference here?
Well, I think if it's okay if I jump in.
Yeah. Please.
One of the benefits of coming to a conference is many of them offer pitch sessions with the visiting editors and agents, which is a chance for you to sit down one-on-one with an editor and agent for 10 minutes and talk about yourself and your project and pitch your idea to them, to say, this is what I'm working on, what do you think? And to ask questions. And that often is an excellent way to get to know what they're looking for if you think you might be a good match, if you could work together with them, they can hear what your ideas are and say, oh, that sounds amazing. Send me some pages to read and to have a conversation about that. The face-to-face part becomes really important because as an editor, I will go back to my office and I may not remember everybody that I talked to, but if I get a query letter that says, hey, we talked at the League of Utah Writers and you asked me to send these pages in, I'll be like, oh, wait, yeah, I do remember this one. And I'm already now more inclined to think favorably because I had a good experience with you. And often that pitch session can be a way to get an invitation to send more of your work directly to an agent who maybe is close to queries at the moment or who maybe is looking for something specifically and can sort of fast track a review. So that becomes a really valuable part of the conference experience as well.
Lisa, do you have advice on like what not to talk about or what not to do in those pitch sessions? Yes. Or what or things that you absolutely should be doing? Like if you've got 10 minutes, I imagine a lot of people can waste their 10 minutes yes. pretty fast. So what should we be focusing on in those times?
Well, that's chapter 9 of my book. Where I talk about it.
She's pulling it out to read to us now.
Like, here we go. I would say when you're pitching in person, it is not about securing a contract. Like nobody ever comes out of a pitch session with a signed contract in hand. Like that just doesn't
they bought
happen.
It. We're not closing a deal.
We're not closing
very
a deal.
Hollywood.
It's not about that. It is about making a connection with somebody else who loves to read. And that somebody else is an agent or an editor. And so when you're pitching, you want to just make sure you're spending the first couple of minutes really talking about your book. And then everything else, the last 8 minutes, is the conversation. It's enough. It's allowing time for the editor to say, tell me more about this. You mentioned that. That sounded interesting. What else do you have? Those kinds of things. I've been in plenty of pitches where somebody sits down and says, okay, in chapter one, the story opens. And they walk me through beat by beat everything that happens in chapter one. And by 9.5 minutes later, I don't know anything about the scope of the story. And I don't have any time to ask questions because time is up and then they're gone. So the pitch.
Yeah. And you don't know the person.
And I don't know the person either. I could tell you what happens in chapter one, but that's not what I'm there to learn. So tell me about who your character is, what the conflict is that they're facing, what choices they have to make and what consequences they're going to face if they fail at their task. If you can tell me those four things in a succinct way that I can remember, then we have a chance to have the conversation about the book and about you. And then I could say, what's your word count? What's the title? What else have you written? What are your plans? What are your goals? And you can also ask me questions. What does the market look like? What does your publishing company look for? How long is the review process? That's important information for you to have as well. It isn't always just a one-way question situation.
Yeah, so it sounds like use that opportunity to find out stuff,
yes.
right? And use that opportunity to share who you are. And I think if you're being a little evil genius, you know, if you're trying to get published, right, you are early in the process, you're vetting all your ideas to see what's really pitchable. You know what I mean? Like if you're really going the extra mile, it's like if I had 10 ideas, one of the things I would be thinking about is which of these 10 ideas can I make a killer pitch? Can I make into a killer pitch? Because the killer pitch does a lot of things. A, it gets the editor's interest. And B, it shows the publisher how they can market the book. Because if it has a killer pitch, that's what goes on the jacket copy of the book and makes the book sellable, right? And so, plus a killer pitch is going to be short,
yeah.
right? And so you have a killer pitch, you have this short killer pitch, and then you can spend some time finding out, getting to know them, being known. I know like for my son was doing summer sales, selling solar, right? And this might be like, wait, this is very random.
He's actually here today to tell you guys all about an opportunity.
yeah, that's...
If we can bring a man in.
It's why I really called you all here today. Yeah, no. No, but like he had noticed something as he did summer sales that I think applies to lots of industries. And what he noticed was that when you get in front of somebody and make a personal connection, that was the key to getting a sale. And so like if you just take that across the board over to a conference, mm-hmm. it's like, hey, try to create a little bit of FaceTime, right? Like where you can be known and show who you are. And like sometimes just because you had some human contact, you're a little more interested in talking to that person, you know?
Yeah. Like people like doing business with people who they know and who they like. Right. And it's really simple. And so it sounds like that needs to be that relationship building is first. And then obviously you have to have a great pitch and a great story. But you may have the relationship and it's still your story might be a bad fit. And it sounds like you want to be with somebody who believes in your story. You don't want your story to be published or represented by somebody who is not excited about it. So
that's a big part of agents, right? Because sometimes you're like, I have been in the position where I was so desperate to get an agent that I didn't really pause and think, do I want this agent, right? Mm-hmm. Like this agent is going to be a long-term relationship and they are going to represent me and my interests. And it's like, yeah, it's good to remember that's a two-way thing, right? You can be a little choosy. You shouldn't go after just the easiest agent to get or the first yes you hear necessarily, unless it's a good fit, right? I'm saying this from the bottom of my heart because the first agent I had wasn't a great fit. And it was like it was a pretty great person, but it wasn't a great fit. And so like, yeah, like be like when you have FaceTime, pay attention. Do I want this person representing me? Am I on the same wavelength as this person? If you're on the same wavelength as your agent, that goes a long way, I promise.
Awesome. Candace, do you have thoughts about agents and working with them at conferences like this?
Agents know what's behind the door. It's like as writers and we haven't published yet, there's like this mysterious door, this mysterious world of publishing that we have no idea about. And they have a glimpse of exactly what their job is when selling your stuff. And so that when you're at a conference, that is a really good just relationship and kind of understanding to learn a little bit more about what the publishing world looks like once you get there.
And now I assume like any industry, there's people who are scamming people. And agents seem, I work more in film, and so I see agents scamming actors and doing that. And so there's kind of a predatory thing going on. I assume this league that you speak of, that you're vetting the agents that are coming here. And just talk to me about that and what that looks like so that everyone here knows that they're not being...
I mean, we research and we seek out people that we admire to come here. And they're paid pretty heavily. So we want to make sure that they feel comfortable coming here and seeking for like that next great novel. So we really do take a lot of time in building those relationships with editors and agents in New York that we will be able to keep them around for a while. If they do find, I mean, as I said, Utah is this weird petri dish of writers, specifically fantasy. And there's a lot of really good, talented talent here in Utah. And so agents like to come here because they do find some of those rare gems that will, skyrocket.
Yeah, it's a rich hunting ground. And if a agent is at a conference, that's part of what they're there for. I mean, they're hoping you are their next big thing, right? Like they want to find something cool that they can share with the world. I mean, that really is that's what they do for a living, right? Yeah,
my job wouldn't exist if I didn't have new material coming in. I always want to find the next story, the one that I can get excited about, the one that I can take back to the office and be like, oh my gosh, I met this person. This is the story. This is amazing. I want to be able to do that. And being able to come to a conference, and I go to plenty of conferences. We have a lot in Utah. And so if I see people at multiple conferences, that also tells me they're serious about their craft. They're here to learn. They're here to network. They're going to have more than one story in them. And I could make a long-term investment in that person. And that's also something that I'm looking for.
That's awesome. We are in a room full of people. So if you guys do have questions, we can raise hands, shout them out. And I know on the Zoom, we have people as well. Do we have questions from the... Not yet. Okay. So if those come, feel free to do it. One of the things... my son is here, Jameson. He's a writer. And he was telling me last night about the conference and being here. And one of the things that he loved is he met somebody who... edits or helps write query letters, right? And is there other people at the conference that have these really niche roles that they play that that attendees should know about when they come to these conferences?
I think you can come to one of these conferences and be blown away by all the strange stuff that we have. Like, we had a police officer here because that was a really good background for anybody who's writing crime novels. And we've had blacksmiths, we've had scientists. We try to get a lot of occupations here that will show a different side to writers so they can write it accurately or get excited or kind of explode their brain with ideas.
Yeah, what a great idea to have specialists talk about what they're a specialist about. Yeah, that's a great idea.
But I still remember there was a class I took from Lisa about how to write a query letter, if you're talking about query letters, that class. And that was several years ago when I went there. But those type of classes that you seek out and you're learning these craft kind of stay with you.
Yeah, because it's funny because you've written this great book and you're excited to sell it. And then you have this whole other skill set or this whole other thing, because writing a query letter is so different from writing a good scene in a novel. It's a very different kind of writing. And so you have to master this weird little niche marketing type of writing to help you connect to the editor or to the agent.
As writers, we never believe, like, I never thought that marketing myself was going to be part of my job. Yeah. Right? All of a sudden, like, writers or authors have so many other hats they have to wear. And that was just not, when I wanted to publish, I just wanted to publish a book and here you go. And
I know, wouldn't that be nice?
Right? Yeah, right? But I didn't realize that I had to, yeah.
Candace, tell us a little bit about your journey, because I know you were published through a publisher and then later you retained those rights back and started self-publishing. Just walk me through those two different worlds that you can live in as an author.
Sure. I mean, that's an interesting question because, I mean, I didn't, when I first published with a publisher, it was a small press. And I really wanted to go with a small press at that time because I knew that they would really invest a lot in me because I felt that they had a little bit more attention on me than maybe a big five. But a small press can only get you so far, and they move on quickly to the next project, and then you are the one that's moving your product. Not if you don't have something else coming out, then they're not really interested because they don't have the investment, or time to put that into that project. So you are left to do all that work. So after five or so years that I was with this publisher, I just outgrew them, to be honest. I had learned so much about the publishing world and what it takes and my own skill set that I decided to seek out to get my rights. If I didn't do that, then I would just have a dead series, basically, that's just living on Amazon with this weird publisher that doesn't do anything and they're just just taking money from me. So I had to learn a lot about how, if I was going to take this series. Also, if it's published, no other publisher is going to be interested in this. Agents don't want a published series. They can't sell that kind of stuff. So there really was very little options for me if I wanted to be a successful writer. I had to take my series and really brand it and create this whole universe that I didn't know when it comes to publishing. And learn all these different how to do it. There was so much research that had to go in to make sure that this was going to be a successful adventure for me. And so that's what I did. And now I took back my rights in 2019, And so far, I'm super happy with what I've done, and that's create an indie press so that I can not only publish my stuff, but I have done like hybrid publishing for other people. That's basically taking someone who wants to publish independently, and but they don't know how. And that's, I will create a product for them, and then they can have that. But it's the industry is so weird now because of that side of indie publishing and self-publishing, that people can do that kind of stuff. There was no option when I first published. You had to go through an agent, you had to go through a publisher. Now you don't. The world is just exploded.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because even if you are publishing in the traditional way at like a big publishing house, still a lot of the marketing is on your shoulders. You know, yeah. like there's no author I know who's serious about it who doesn't also take a big interest in their marketing. I certainly have my whole career. And it's like, I think of it like it's not super fun to plan your own birthday party, but it's nice to have a party, you know, if you want to have a party. And, you know, and there'll be people that come up to me and say, hey, I like your books. I heard about your books. And I'd be like, because I've been begging people for years to read them, you know, and like without anyone being interested for a long time. And so, you know, I think for every author, it's important to figure out what aspects of book marketing can you participate in to give yourself a competitive advantage, because you care more than anybody else that your series is successful, even more than your publisher, even more than your agent.
Yeah. Lisa, what's been your experience with just coming more from the publishing side as far as like making sure your authors do feel cared for, that they do, like that you're giving them the attention? Because you probably don't have the bandwidth to give every product the attention that the author wants you to give to those products. So how do you manage that when you have a whole list of books and products?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one we struggle with a lot. And it depends season to season with what kinds of books and which authors that we have. One benefit of going with a traditional publishing house over self-publishing is that you do have access to a sales team, a marketing team, publicist. Wow, that is not even a word.
Publicist.
Thank you. You have access. Those people are on your team, just like your editor is on your team and the cover designer, and everybody's on your team. And so you do have access to those people, and they can help in those to launch your book and to create a marketing plan and to do some of those things to really get you set up and in a good position. Like Candace was saying, at some point that responsibility sort of does then fall on the author to maintain and to continue as the publishing and the editorial department, we move on to the next book coming down the pipeline.
Kind of after you've been launched.
Yeah. Then you're
at some point after the launch, you got to add some steam of your own, right?
But we always want to make sure that, you know, we talk to the authors. Where do you feel comfortable? What resources do you have? Who do you know? Do you have a friend that we could get a put you on a podcast or put you on TV? Or, you know, is there something special about your book that we could pitch it to teachers and librarians? You know, we want to collaborate with you to find those inroads and those avenues to make it easy for you. Social media, of course, is always a big deal, but you don't have to be on every single platform if you don't want to. Like, we want you to be where you're most comfortable. I've worked with some authors that were not great in front of kids at school visits. So we stopped sending him to schools because it was not helpful.
You can name names. No, I'm joking.
And that was something that we would have liked to do, but it was not benefiting anybody. So we found other opportunities and other ways for him to connect with his readers and talk about his books where he felt more comfortable and could actually make a better impact. So it is tailored. We do want you to feel good about it. And we also want you to be excited about your book through the whole process, because you're going to need to shoulder some of that burden down the road. And hopefully it won't feel like a burden. Hopefully it's because you love your book. I still am talking even more than a decade later about the Hourglass Door, which was the first book that I wrote. And when I wrote that book and got it published, I knew I only had just a handful of minutes to do marketing because I was still working full time. And so I said, what can I do? I made myself a goal that first year. I said, I'm going to do one thing a week that is marketing related, whether that's a book signing at a store, whether that is a blog post, whether that's an interview with somebody. I didn't care what it was. I made an effort to just say one thing a week. And at the end of that first year, I didn't have 52 things that I had done. I had 73. And I was astounded at how much I was able to do on my own, generate just with a few little minutes a week devoted to marketing a book. It is possible to do it if you're creative and if you're willing to say yes to opportunities that come your way.
And so you learn to play to your strengths,
yeah.
Right? Like for me, if it was blog posts, it takes me so much time to formulate a good blog post that it's not efficient for me to do that a whole lot. I can do it from time to time, but it's not efficient because I also have to write books and I have to do other things. For some reason, for me, a school visit, I can do it in my sleep and do a really good job.
So right? Lisa wasn't talking about you.
Yeah, I wasn't that guy.
A great job.
I've done thousands of school visits, and there's a reason, because that was a strength of mine. I could get in front of a group of kids and make them laugh and feel engaged. And so, yeah, so if that's something you're good at, that's something you do. Right?
But it sounds like either way, whether you self-publish or go through a traditional publishing house, you're going to be working. Right, there's work that you need to do to get your book out there. We do have a question in the back.
Oh,
and then Lisa, can you just repeat the question
so her question for me was examples of some of those small things that I did in a given week. I remember there was a time I just called every single Barnes & Noble in the area and said, I'm a local author. Would it be okay if I came in and signed your stock? I didn't have an official signing. Sometimes they said, oh yeah, let's actually have you come in and let's set up a signing. But sometimes I would just drive in and I'd sign for the three copies of my book that was in the store. They'd put a sticker on it. And then that was the thing I did that week. But the benefit of that was now it's an autographed copy. They display it at the front of the store for a little bit of time.
And there's a secondary benefit when you go in and do that. You bond with the booksellers as much as you can and make sure they kind of know what you wrote and make sure they know how to pitch it because
they're the front line, right?
Making friends with booksellers, making even just a little impression that way where you maybe put your book on top of mine because you interacted with them in an energetic, friendly way. That can help the cause over time, right?
I would take a pack of bookmarks to the library and say, do you have a place where I could put these, they're free, could you hand them out to people that are looking for YA books? I would network with either people I'd met at conferences or other authors that I knew, and I would do, like, send me 5 interview questions, I'll type them up, and you can put it on your website or put it as part of your newsletter. Things like that, I could do a number of those things, like on a Saturday, and then roll them out once a week when I had time. I would sometimes do bigger things where I would teach at a conference. Like maybe I would have a chance to go to LDS Storymakers at the time. It was LDS Storymakers. Or I'd go to LTUE. Or I would go, or the library would have an evening with where I could teach a class for the community. And those were sort of like bigger things. But that way I would have a chance to interact with everybody, and I would have a chance to stand up in front of people and say, this is who I am, this is what my book is called, and here's one thing you need to know about it. And that snowballed into, eventually I was at a book signing, and the Davis County Women's Entrepreneurial Conference asked me to be their keynote. I'm like, I'm not an entrepreneur. And then I'm like, wait a minute.
I am.
Yes, I am. And I was able to speak at that. And I know that that is because I just kept putting myself in small places that led to bigger places and said yes.
Yeah, it's looking for opportunities. I'll give you a non-book related one. It's this podcast that we're doing right now in this room is because I bought my son a ticket to this to this conference. And then I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to a conference full of people who are potentially our audience for this podcast. So I reached out to Rachel and it was like, hey, or I guess you could say the Evil League of Evil. What's the name of the league again?
League of Utah Writers.
The League of Utah Writers. And was like, hey, we do this podcast. We have similar things, right? Can we figure out something that works? And so it's just looking for those small things. Is your book part represent a community or speaks to community? And what can you do to be involved on social media with that community and stuff? So I assume that's all the types of things. Just looking for those small connections and then being annoying.
In its simplest form, it's go fish where the fish are, right? So you think about where's the audience for this book and how do I get in front of them? And sometimes that can be done online and sometimes that can be done in person. And like things like a writing conference is a great place to be if you're talking about books and sharing books. And like if you look at what my traditional publishers do, I mean, they're sending me to the American Library Association. Why? You fish where the fish are. If you have librarians who know your book, then that helps your book get out into libraries. And like if you sell to all the libraries, you sold like 30,000 books or something. You know what I mean? Because libraries buy books like just like humans do. And if your book's on the shelf in the library, guess what? Like you get readers. And if you have readers, you're going to have a job. At the end of the day, like the question is my book the kind of book that someone reads it and goes, that's pretty darn good. I'm going to tell a friend. And at the end of the day, that's what makes your book sink or swim. But you got to do what you can to those. So it's got to start somewhere, right? And so you got to send out sparks wherever you can, you using your best common sense and your best creativity.
That's awesome. Candace, can you talk a little bit more about the league? It sounds like, from my perspective, you're an author, but you are part of this community, right? And so what's the benefit of just being a part of the writing community that's so big in Utah? What do you get out of it beyond just being an author?
Well, I have met some of the best people here at these conferences. And I enjoy coming every year just to see them. But there has been a lot of collaboration. One of the things I met, so I do a podcast, and I met my partner in crime, I'll say, Jody Milner, who is another fantasy author, at one of these conferences. And so we, because of our, I don't know, banter a little bit and how our relationship grew, we decided to try to do this podcast because we thought it would be really fun. And we're both distracted and we both have like neurodivergence. And so we decided, well, maybe we could do this podcast. That's one of the things that grew from being in the chapter. We share the same chapter in the league. And so when I meet people that I bond with and we can grow as a community, but also within our own writing journey, whatever we're doing, we can collaborate and build upon whatever stories we're building or like books we're marketing, we can build on it. And others, like we'll meet other people who also have a different skill set and they will be able to help us push stuff or build whatever we're doing. I mean, there's just so much network and so much friendships that happen at these conferences that it's incredible. So I love coming. I love doing this. What was the other question? I don't remember. You keep going on your questions. So
right.
Did I answer it?
I think you answered it.
It's important to know you're not alone, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes that's hard because by nature, if you're like me, you're kind of an introvert. If you're a writer, that sometimes it does draw a lot of introverts. And sometimes that's hard to get to know people. And even if you go to a conference, that's hard to get to know people. But it's like also knowing that everybody is a bunch of writing introverts, sometimes you can find the courage or build the bridge, right? Because like you're like, okay, these people are kind of like me. There's got to be a way, you know what I mean? And you look for your opportunities.
Yeah, I assume forming writing groups or finding people to be beta readers and stuff like that would be a good opportunity at conferences like this. And
as writers, I feel that we're a little insecure about our own stuff. So
It's just such a great understatement.
Right? And finding other people to help build you and critique your stuff and give you advice is really valuable. That's another thing that I feel that this specific conference has done for me, is just build my confidence as a writer. So every year we do a contest, and we'll do contests for people that are not published. And because of that, that gives them a little bit more courage that they're doing something good, and help them pursue something that they're, you know, passionate about.
Yeah, tell me. Oh, we got questions.
What the
and repeat the question.
Sure, we're talking about the contest, and I get a little bit more deep in that. So we do things just like a small short stories or first chapters, whatever you're kind of working on, you can just submit to any one of those categories. And when you have those, whatever you submit, there's an awards banquet and whatever. But we also the awards is tomorrow night. It happens on the third day of our conference. We have a banquet. But we also, for published authors, there's like book awards that we do every year. We do like the Quill Awards. So when you're published and you submit your book, you can also get recognized for that.
So it helps you realize, hey, my book's getting read by somebody and I'm getting some validation, because we're also hungry to have some wind in our sails as we're trying to write and share stories.
I think that as writers, we need that more than anyone else.
And it helps on the publishing side too, because if I see a query letter, if you're going to be a debut author and maybe you don't have a long list of credentials behind you, but if you say, I won first place in the League of Utah Writers fantasy category, that tells me something. That tells me that people read your work, and your peers read your work and felt it was worthy of an award, felt it was worthy of recognition. So that tells me, well, this is probably worth my time. So entering contests like that at conferences like for Quills and League of Utah Writers, you can then use that in your query letter to help explain who you are and why I should want to hire you to write books for me.
And that's just life advice, right? Use every little bit of success to leverage more success, right? I mean, that's if you're not doing that in general, like, catch up. That's how it works, kind of. You know what I mean?
Another question.
So what was said here?
Yeah. We need to recap that so we can
for the mic, right? Yeah. And we can edit this a little bit, so it'll be great. What was said here was that at the Quills Conference, there's also freelance editors, like a freelance editors organization, that will look at your work, and as they look at your work, you can get feedback from someone who's not your mom, who can give you guidance and maybe some validation, right? And that is, like, I don't know, like if you are an aspiring writer, that's something that you're really hungry for usually.
Yeah. It sounds like there's tons of opportunities, and it's just about leveraging those opportunities. It seems like if you come to the conference just to be a fly on the wall and not take those opportunities, you're not going to get the full experience and a lot out of it.
But you can come be a fly on the wall too. You know what I mean? Like, and sometimes that's how you start, is you come, be a fly on the wall, because, hey, you can take the classes, right? And you can get some information. And as you pay attention, though, it's like, hey, I might as well take every opportunity that's available here, right, as you learn more.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and sometimes being on a fly on the wall, literally, because this particular conference and many conferences have hybrid options where you can attend online from anywhere. So you don't necessarily, you could come to this conference and learn the take the classes and learn from people through the live stream and online options, which is a cool thing that is happening.
Very good. I think we're going to wrap up things here. Before we do, let's just do final thoughts, starting with Lisa and work our way down. So any final thoughts about these conferences and what we can get out of them?
I love coming to conferences. I have come to many, many of them here, in other states, in even Canada, I've been invited. And universally, the thing that I love about conferences is the sense of community that I feel and the excitement that I feel from all of the authors that are here who want to have their work read, who want to get better, who are excited to learn a new technique or have a conversation in the hallway about comma splices. Like, it feels so enveloping and so welcoming, and I see, and I love to come because I see my friends every year. Yeah, I might find a good book, I might find a new person, but really I'm here selfishly to see all of my friends again and to catch up with, what are you doing? What are you working on? What's your next book? And that community part is invaluable.
I agree completely with Lisa. And I love coming to these conferences. I'm constantly seeking a creative life. And that's what these conferences help do for me, is build my confidence to keep seeking that goal of being creative and having that creative life.
And if you're kind of a shy person, and if that's a little bit your nature, you can come to these conferences and work on that too, right? Because at least here, you're coming to here, and when I say here,
it seems like a safe place.
Any writer's conference is about as safe a place as you can go to wear your writing on your sleeve as a writer, because in general, in theory, if you think about it, this is your friendliest audience, where everybody understands we're all here kind of doing the same thing. We all like to make content. We're all trying to get our stuff shared and out there, and we're all trying to learn more about how to do that better. And that's a lot of common ground to build some bridges and build some friendships. And you know, you know that your odds are pretty good if you bring up anything in the writing category as a topic. Yeah, there'll be someone on the other side of that conversation, right? And so it's wise and useful if you're going to try to have a writing career. You want to overcome your shyness as best you can, right? Because you need to learn how to go play a role at a book signing or play a role in a library visit, or and that, look, I grew into doing that so much better as I practiced, right? Like, that wasn't my nature as a younger person, and I grew into being able to do that as I practiced.
That's awesome. As we were closing, we got our last question, and it was my favorite question, not to disparage you guys, but somebody asked, where can we find this podcast later? Which is why I'm here. So this is the Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and we'd love for you to re-listen to this one and then listen to all our other ones as well. So thank you, everyone here, for joining us. And those listening at home, thank you for being on another episode with us of Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole.
Yay.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for hanging out with us.